Good Tuesday afternoon, football fans. Welcome to another edition of the Soccer Central podcast. I'm your host, John Molinaro, senior soccer reporter for Sportsnet. James Sharman isn't in studio with me today as he's at home looking after his daughter who has a touch of the flu. But James is going to join us on the phone later on in the show to talk about what was a very memorable weekend in the FA Cup. We'll preview this weekend's Chelsea-Man City game. We'll also talk about the latest with Toronto FC. Before that, though, we're going to talk about the latest news on Sebastian Giovinco and Juventus and his pending move to Toronto FC. I'm pleased to welcome to the show David Amoyel. David is a U.S.-based reporter who's also a pundit for the Beyond the Pitch podcast, a regular contributor to ESPN, and an all-around Italian football expert. David's been covering the TFC Giovinco Juventus story for the English webpage of Italian football journalist Gianluca Di Marzo, and he joins us now on the phone from Boston. David, how are you?
A pleasure to be on with you guys. Thank you so much for that nice introduction.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Hope you're staying warm in Boston. I know you guys have been hit by that blizzard. Well, I mean, as I said, off the top, you've been sort of following this Giovinco story. What's the latest? What are you hearing as to when he might join TFC?
Well, first of all, it's interesting that you use the word following, because that's exactly how I've been feeling. You guys in Toronto have been ahead of us on this one. So first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
So, but what I can tell you recently, right when Giovinco signed with Toronto, he has an expiring contract with Juve. So the reason Toronto signed him for next season is they could just negotiate with him for the time period after his contract expired. So, you know, they could sign him on a free transfer, and I think that's one of the reasons why they offered him such a high salary. But what in my experience, what happens a lot of times is when clubs sign a player on a free transfer for the following season, sometimes they're able to negotiate to bring the player sooner. We saw that Milan with Liverpool, they had signed Suso for next season, and then shortly after they negotiated a deal to bring him to Serie A right away. So when Giovinco signed with Toronto, I right away thought that was a distinct possibility. So the latest news is that Giovinco's agent, D'Amico, has been negotiating with Juve to try to get him to Toronto in time for the start of the MLS season. This was actually confirmed by Juve's executive director, Beppe Marotta, who said, yes, it's the case. We're talking to Giovinco to find a solution that works for everyone. So I think right now they're negotiating that. Juve's looking to bring potentially another striker to kind of replace Giovinco, but I don't think it's a huge priority for them because Giovinco hasn't played much this season. So it's not that they need a big name, they just kind of need an insurance policy. So assuming they can bring someone in like that, I would say odds are Giovinco will be traveling to Toronto in time for the start of the season.
Do you think that's what it depends on, and them being able to get a replacement? I mean, would they let him go, let him release him from his contract early if they couldn't necessarily get a replacement?
I think they would prefer that. You know, he's only played, I think, in about 11 games this season, a lot of them as a substitute. To give you some perspective, their starting strikers, Tevez, Llorente, Morata, have played around 25 games each, and they've started a lot of them. So it's not like Giovinco has been playing a lot. Juve also has a young French attacking player, Koeman, who's played very well for them in very limited duty. So I think even say he left without a replacement, it wouldn't be a huge deal for them, but they are trying to bring in some players. One of them, their first target was Simone Zaza, who plays for Sassuolo in Italy's national team. Juve kind of has an option, not kind of, they have an option to acquire him in the summer, and they were trying to bring him in sooner, but their club, Sassuolo, doesn't want to let him leave. But I think he's just their top choice. I think they have some other options as well. They have Osvaldo, who played for them last season, who's having issues at Inter. I think he could return. And then there's Pazzini at Milan, and Milan's trying to get Destro from Roma. So I think they have options. So I wouldn't say it's a definite that Juve would need a replacement, but if they have one, I think it would make letting Giovinco go a little bit easier.
We talked to Toronto FC general manager Tim Bezbachenko yesterday. Toronto FC opened their first day of training camp, and we asked him about Giovinco and whether he would come in January or July. And he maintains that he personally has not had any talks with Juventus about him releasing. So it seems like they're very much letting Giovinco and his agent drive the bus on this one to see if they can arrange for him to get released early, and that they would only Toronto would only directly get involved as a last resort, because I think this is just something that they figure Giovinco has to and his agent have to work out on their own.
And, you know, that makes perfect sense to me. And I don't think, you know, he was lying when he said that at all.
No, neither do I. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's Giovinco's agent that's driving that process. So, you know, in general, I have to tell you, I take what is said about transfers with a grain of salt, what is said publicly. But it makes perfect sense that he would say that. And, you know, keep in mind another thing, too. Juve's executive director, Marotta, right before they announced Giovinco to Toronto on Monday, he said the day before, look, I haven't spoken to anyone. And he wasn't lying either, because Giovinco has that expiring contract. His agent could negotiate with Toronto. So right now I feel like tables have flipped a little bit. Toronto doesn't need to talk to Juve. They need to let Giovinco's agent resolve this. I don't expect Juve would want a transfer fee, or if they did, it would be so minimal that it wouldn't have a big impact. So I think, you know, because of the unique situation of Giovinco having an expiring contract, it's kind of a situation where the two clubs don't need to talk to each other at all. So it's kind of a perfect situation for Giovinco's agent.
Yeah, and I'm told today that Sebastian Giovinco's agent is in Toronto, recently arrived. So perhaps he's got some news or with regards to his release, or it could be just as well. It's just to finalize his, you know, Giovinco's contract with TFC. What's been the overall reaction in Italy to this? I mean, I think my sense is that MLS isn't really followed all that much in Italy, so I'd be curious to know what from what you gather, what's been the reaction in Italy to, you know, a star Juventus player, albeit he's not playing a lot this year, but still a marquee player such as Giovinco leaving Serie A for Major League Soccer.
Great question, and I'll answer it with a couple of things. First off, I think it says a lot that in Italy, nobody knew that Giovinco was so close to Toronto up until late Friday night, you know, the weekend before it was announced. Now, you know, I do shows in Toronto. I know a lot of people, and I was constantly asked about Giovinco, and I did quite a bit of research. I couldn't find anything in Italy up until, like, late Friday on him going to Toronto. And I think that has a lot to do with how the league is perceived in Italy. I don't think anyone really thought that a player who's still in his prime, 27, doesn't play much for Juve, but plays for the Italian national team, would want to go to MLS. So I think the attitude that there is in Italy towards MLS was one of the reasons why they were so far behind on this story. The reaction after he signed was that Giovinco was being a mercenary and how could he give up on his career. But, you know, I always tell people, if someone offered to triple my salary, I'd certainly think about it, and I most likely would say yes. And that's the situation that he found himself in. So I think in Italy, people are starting to understand a little bit more. I think it also really helped that, you know, the year before we saw Michael Bradley, you know, leave a starting position in Italy to go play in Toronto. But, you know, he had ties to MLS that Giovinco didn't have. So I think the tide's turning a little bit. I think, you know, also the fact that Kaká is playing at Orlando and he's a player that has huge ties with Milan kind of helped the league, and I think people are starting to understand that the league really is growing. It was very interesting that Italy's national team coach, Conte, who was with Giovinco at Juve up until last season, I think it was 2 days ago, he said, look, a lot more Italian young players are going to be heading to MLS. There's a league that's a reality now. So I think Giovinco's might be looked at as a pioneer in a couple of years. We might see more Italian players, you know, not just the ones who are ready to retire, like we saw with Nesta and Di Vaio head MLS. So I think the tide's turning a little bit. I think what Conte said certainly helps the MLS and how it's perceived in Italy.
Yeah, that's a great point about Conte, and I was going to bring that up because he kind of came out and said, you know, this is, the people shouldn't be surprised, because this is, you know, if I was in his place, I would go, and he sees this as a trend. in terms of more players leaving not just Serie A, but Europe to go play in MLS because, you know, the game is really growing here. Yeah. So I think you're right. This could be the beginning of a trend. Knowing all this and with Conte kind of coming out and saying that he kind of backed him for this move, I don't know. Do you think that bodes well for him in terms of Giovinco possibly continuing to play for the Italian national team, or does the fact that it's MLS and it's perceived as a step down, well, is that going to substantially hurt his chances?
Well, I would tell you, say Conte wasn't the coach of the national team in Italy, I would say it would hurt his chances a lot more. Say it was someone who doesn't have such a close connection to Giovinco. I would say, again, because of the perception there is in Europe and in Italy on MLS, it would hurt him. But Conte knows him very well. Even when Giovinco was struggling at Juve and he coached the team, he always defended him very vocally with Juve fans, you know, not just with neutral fans. And with the Italian national team, you know, he still selected him. Granted, the Azzurri haven't played in a couple of months now, but when they were playing, he was still selecting Giovinco. Giovinco actually got to wear the number 10 jersey. That's an iconic jersey for Italy's national team. But I think Giovinco still has a good chance. And what really helps him is just the lack of the players at that position on Italy. You know, we see so many great Italian players, strikers, creative attackers who are getting old and ready to retire. And quite frankly, there aren't many good young ones coming up to replace the Totti and the Del Pieros of the world. So I think Giovinco still has a very good chance of playing for the Azzurri. And I think that's great marketing for Toronto. You know, a lot of people in Italy are saying, you know, well, why would Toronto pay him so much money? And it's like, you know, perception is reality and perception in different countries is different. Right. Toronto sees it. Look, we got a player in his prime who plays for the Italian national team. This is a great signing for us. And that's the way they should look at it. You know, in Italy, they could say, oh, well, he's a bench player at Juve. But that's just perception. And it changes from country to country. So if I was Giovinco, I think his chances of playing for the Azzurri aren't really hurt that much by this move.
No, I think you're right. And I think it certainly helps that Conte is the coach as well, because he kind of goes to a beat of his own drum to begin with. And he does have that relationship with Giovinco at their time from Juventus when he managed the Bianconeri. So I don't think it's necessarily a death sentence with regards to Giovinco's national team career. David, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. But before we let you go, maybe you can tell our listeners how they can check you out on Twitter.
Thank you, John. And first of all, a big thank you. I have a lot of Twitter friends in Toronto and in Canada, so you can follow me at David Amoyal, all one word. The website is GianlucaDiMarzio.com, and we have an English page where we're following all the big transfer rumors. And I recently started writing on ESPN FC, so you'll see my articles there as well. But again, I want to thank you for having me on your show. And again, congratulate you for being far ahead of us on this move. So great job with that. And I look forward to you breaking more stories of Italian players coming to Toronto. And hopefully this time we won't be so far behind you.
Well, I hope so. Anyway, listen, David, thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
My pleasure. Thanks Cheers. Again.
David Amoyal from ESPN FC, lots of other great stuff. So we'll have him back on the show sometime in the future. Pleased to be joined now by my Soccer Central co-host, James Sharman, who's playing hooky today, not in studio. He's slacking off. No, he's actually at home taking care of his daughter because she's got the flu, right?
Yeah, the stomach flu has made its way through our house the last two or three days. So it's been a fun time, let me tell you. A fun time.
Now, did she pass it on to you or did you pass it on to her?
I think she gave it to me. And then I got better quickly, and she's on the outskirts of it now. So okay. She'll be fine. But yeah, not very pleasant.
No, I guess not. So that was quite the magical weekend in terms of the FA Cup. Cambridge holding Manchester United 0-0. They get the replay. Bradford City upsetting Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, no less. Middlesbrough upsetting Manchester City. So the two best teams in English football gone, leaving Arsenal and possibly Liverpool and Manchester United. God, what did you make of all that?
Well, I loved it. I thought it was just brilliant. And I wrote about that on the blog on sportsnet.ca today. I thought it's just outstanding. And you see these results in the FA Cup every now and again. You see these giants coming into games at home often, and they're overconfident. They're looking ahead to perhaps bigger games in their league. They could become maybe complacent, perhaps. They've been up for the season, the entire season, and now in the, you know, the dark days of January, they switch off for 90 minutes. And on the flip side, these smaller clubs or clubs from the lower divisions, they're playing for everything. You know, I mean, listen, this is their career in some cases. You know, some of these guys, some of those Cambridge players, for example, this will be their highlight of their entire career. So they are up for these games. They are respecting them, sure, but they are going for them. And it just shows, as I mentioned in that blog, you know, sometimes it's just 11 v 11. It's as simple as that. And the team that wants it more wins, because let's be honest, Bradford had no right going into that ground and winning, no right whatsoever. Cambridge had no right expecting a replay, but it happens. And it is the old cliche, the magic of the FA Cup.
What did I mean? Yeah, and it's interesting too, because you know, you talk about the magic of the FA Cup, but it seems like you personally, you only take some magic, because now you're, I think you wrote in the blog about, yeah, that's enough for the upsets now. I want to see like a big team win it. Why?
Yeah, well, just because, listen, the FA Cup, you know, it's taken its hits and its lumps over the years, and you know, I love getting the surprises earlier in the competition, the giant killing out of the way, because when it comes to that big game at Wembley in May, I do want to see a big game. I want to see the marquee tilt. I want to see a big occasion here happening, you know, between these teams, and for the whole league, for the whole tournament, for English soccer to really embrace the big spectacle. And when you have, we had like Cardiff against Portsmouth a few years ago now, and that was nice and all. It's right. Good, you know, it's a nice moment for those teams, but I think the actual occasion lost something. So it's okay having a Hull in the final like last year, or Wigan a few years ago, but you still want to have at least one big team in there.
Right.
Sorry, my daughter's running around kind of crazy.
Why does it matter? I mean, the competition's come in for a lot of criticism over the last couple of years. Teams mm-hmm. not necessarily taking it seriously. Obviously, this past weekend gave it a major shot in the arm with all the upsets. But mm-hmm. in this era of, you know, the Champions League and major money in the Premier League, and you know, everyone's watching La Liga more and the Bundesliga. Yeah. I mean, why does the FA Cup matter? Why do you think it matters to you?
I think it matters because, you know, it just, every team in the country who's a member of the FA, so over 700 teams enter this thing. You know, so amateur teams can enter this tournament and potentially they can play Manchester United or Chelsea or Man City. It's incredible, right? I mean, what other tournament in the world can you say that an amateur team potentially could play the biggest team in the country? It's the romance, you know, in this day of money and prestige and big trophies and big transfers. This is a real innocent tournament, really. It's knockout, it's clean football, it's in and out, 90 minutes, winner goes on, or you might get a replay if you're lucky. You know, so I think it's just it's very simple. It's very innocent in many, many ways, you know, compared to the rest of the game nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Turning our attention to the Premier League, massive weekend, this one coming up. Some marquee games, but none more so than Chelsea versus Manchester City on Saturday at Stamford Bridge. You can watch that game on mm-hmm. Sportsnet. We'll have more details on that later. But what are your thoughts on this marquee matchup at the Bridge?
Well, it's brilliant, isn't it? And two teams that are, you know, injured animals. Now, we'll see, of course, Chelsea later on today. They're playing Liverpool in the Capital One Cup. They might be in good spirits. They might be in awful spirits with another loss. You know, we don't know that right now. But two teams that are by far and away the two best teams in English football this year. JMO, we've been saying that since really the week one, haven't we? You know, that there's a big gap, it seems, between the top two teams and the rest. And it's too early to say it's a title decider. But let's say Chelsea win. Is it 8 points up, I believe? Is it 5 points now, I think, up on Man City in the table right now? That'd be 8 points. That's pretty much, in my opinion, insurmountable. So it's probably too early to say it's a title decider. But if Chelsea win it, man, it may well turn out to be just that. Two teams playing, obviously, aside from their cup form, playing much better in the league. You know, some more questionable results in recent weeks, perhaps, when they've been found out a little bit. But it really is that marquee tilt. And there aren't many marquee tilts in the Prem this year because, yeah, those two. And then you have the rest. So for me, it's, you know, the one to watch this season, maybe the most important match of the season.
Well, and it's an interesting point you make about, because it's essentially they're so much far ahead of the field, right? So under normal circumstances, I'm not sure like a City loss, you know, you could write off the title race, but the fact that it is a two horse race, if Chelsea does win, they pad their lead. Plus it's a huge psychological blow too for City to have lost that game. So you really have to wonder how or if they would even be able to come back.
Yeah, you do. I mean, one thing about Man City, at times they can look a bit fragile, can't they?
And absolutely.
Right now with that Yaya Toure in the 11, it's really shown how dependent they are on that guy. And we knew it before he left for the African Cup of Nations, how, you know, in the past the form isn't good without him. But we've also questioned his form this season. When he's in that 11, has he played at the top of his game? And he hasn't done so far this year. But since he left at the beginning of January, they just haven't been quite themselves, have they? And, you know, there's talk about, I think they're playing tomorrow at the Ivory Coast. They could potentially get him back by the weekend, but that's highly unlikely. Yeah. And it just shows that team who are that dependent on one player are perhaps a little bit fragile mentally. So could they, you know, recoup a potentially 8-point lead? Is 8 points, Jamie? I haven't got the table in front of me.
I don't either, but I believe
yeah,
that's,
I think
so,
it's five,
yeah,
right now, isn't it? I think so. If Chelsea won, it'd be 8. I believe that's what it is. So that's a big gap to close, and especially with Chelsea, who, despite their cup form, you know, really are, you know, the strongest mentally in this league because of their manager, who doesn't let them take games off very often. So, you know, 8 points would be, you know, 2 losses, 2 draws rest of the way. Man, the way they've played so far, you do wonder.
Yeah, be very tough. Is there a one-on-one battle in this game that you're especially looking forward to watching?
I just don't know what the 11s will be, really.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea, obviously, we know what their preferred 11 is, and he's been rotating a little bit here and there. Cesc Fabregas, obviously, is so key to Chelsea, and you look at the midfield for Chelsea, too, with Matic there, key as well, compared to the City midfield. David Silva, if Yaya's not there, there's so much emphasis on David Silva, and he hasn't really taken the ball yet by the horns just yet and taken that team as his in Yaya's absence. So, you know, that midfield battle, I think, will be fantastic. It'll be exciting. It really will. Obviously, there's no Boney yet for Man City. He's not there. Aguero's back, but he hasn't looked great so far in limited action from his injury. So, lots of question marks, but I think it's going to be won or lost in that midfield. Both teams' midfields are very impressive, even without Yaya for Man City. But I think it'll be tight, say at least. And it's going to be a close game. There's no doubt about that.
Some interesting news out of Toronto FC. Yesterday they opened training camp, and Greg Vanney, I wouldn't say it was a bombshell, but did say that it's not necessarily that Stephen Caldwell is going to retain the captain's armband. Saying that he's going to talk to the players and on a one-on-one basis, and then he'll make a decision over the ensuing weeks. What do you think? Is this that big of a deal? Is this an issue if they actually take the armband away from Caldwell and give it to someone else?
Well, I said no, but then if you heard Caldwell comments, and you spoke to him, JMO,
yesterday,
and he was saying how he loves being captain and he doesn't want to lose it, right? So if he is stripped of it, then it is a story because he doesn't want to be stripped of it. To me, it's just, I think it's pointless changing it now. Michael Bradley is his team. We know that, right? He is the star player. He's the guy they're trying to sell, and he is, you know, as everything we hear is a real leader in that room, as is Caldwell, of course.
Yep.
But what does the armband really signify in this day and age? Can't he just keep Caldwell happy for this season? Bradley's, to me, the kind of player I think who would be fine if they tell him, listen, in a year from now, Stephen Caldwell is, what, 35, 36? Maybe it's his last year. Who knows? But regardless, he's got a short tenure at this team. When he leaves, when he steps aside, the armband's yours. In the meantime, just lead as you've been leading the last year. You know, to me, what might happen is a problem, so why even risk it? Just keep it as is. Keep the status quo, because you want to keep Caldwell happy. He's been a class ambassador for this team since the day he got here. Why mess with it now?
But you'd have to think, I mean, knowing Caldwell as I do, I mean, he's a professional, and I'd have to think, yeah, he's going to be disappointed, as he said, if he's not captain, but he's not going to pout. I mean, I have to think that he's going to be a professional about this if, you know, they do hand the armband.
I'm sure he would be. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure he would be. But just his comments today, it makes it a story now, right? Because of what he said. If tomorrow they say, Michael Bradley's our captain, then, you know, it's just going to add a bit more intrigue, a bit more of a soap opera to what is always a soap opera at TFC.
Right.
You know, at least from the media's and fan perspective. Maybe it's not in the room. Who knows?
Right.
But I just don't see the point of it, because in this day and age, you can still lead without the armband.
No, I agree.
You know, and you can still sell Michael Bradley without the armband,
right?
As far as sell him, as far as, you know, brand him and market him, which is what they want to do. So, I don't know. I mean, it's not a huge deal. They get over it. Whatever happens, happens. You know, it's not make or break. It's not going to be the reason why this team is successful or not. But to me, it's just leave it a year. Keep it as is. Guy's happy as is. He's done a good job as a captain. You know, Bradley's, you know, like I mentioned, the kind of player that's not going to be, sulking if he hasn't got the armband, I don't think. So just status quo. Deal with it next year.
And they could have dealt with this a whole lot better. I mean, and the way it kind of came out, like, you know, why do this in such a public fashion? If you just done it privately and at the start of the season, look, Stephen Caldwell is going to remain as captain, or we've gone another way and we've gone with so-and-so. Now this is like building up for like weeks on end, and it's just going to be a much bigger than it has to be.
Especially as us media and the fans are just looking for anything, right?
Right.
The smallest little thing, sign of anything, we're going to jump all over it.
Right.
That's just the reality of Toronto FC because of what's happened in recent years. So why even give us this carrot? You know, just deal with it, you know, and deal with it early. You know, let's just, if they are going to make a change, do it now before preseason really begins. You know, let's not string people along here. Let everyone know where they're at, and then we can all move on and get over this.
No, I agree. And to be honest, it doesn't really interest me all that much. So
me neither. Captain is pro sports nowadays. It's not like it used to be.
No, not at all. I think that's the thing.
If you've got a great captain, then good for you. It can be beneficial. But nowadays, I mean, you don't need to have that armband to be a big presence and a leader in that room, really. You just don't.
No, I think you're right. I think you want 11 captains out there.
And in many ways, I mean, with Caldwell playing pretty much every game, barring injury, whereas Bradley will be away for you know, US duty.
Right.
You know, maybe you want that consistency.
Could be.
Well, I think we're in agreement. Really, we'll make something of it. We have to. But when it comes down to it, it's not that big a deal. And luckily, the two guys who are being discussed in this situation are the kind of guys that aren't going to let it affect their game.
No.
They're going to be professionals no matter what.
No, I think that's right. Listen, good stuff, Sharms. Get back to your daughter, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, pal. Yeah, I'll speak to all these listeners hopefully on Thursday in the podcast.
Cheers.
All right.
James Sharman from Soccer Central Coast, playing hooky today. Before we go, got to remind you that there are 5 Premier League games on Sportsnet this weekend, including Liverpool versus West Ham, and the big one, Chelsea versus Manchester City from Stamford Bridge. Go to sportsnet.ca and consult the broadcast schedule for full details. And we'll also have in-depth preview coverage of the Chelsea City game all this week on sportsnet.ca. James Sharman, Brendan Dunlop, and Thomas Dobby are going to be back with another edition of Soccer Central Podcast Thursday. Until then,